Hello and welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. I'm your host this week, Will Wilson, and with me is Tracy Erickson.
Hello.
And John Jordan.
Hello.
No Ben this week. He's off.
Another doctor's appointment, unfortunately.
Well, that's what he told me, but when he was telling me that, I heard screams of pain and demons laughing in the background, and I think what happened last week when we thought he had a connection problem, what actually happened was he had opened a portal to another world, and that was just the early stages of that portal opening, was that he had broadband issues.
He's been playing too much Onimusha.
Yeah. So yes, my introductions never go anywhere, so we'll go straight to the news. And first up on the news is the, I guess it's the big story of the week, really, is that EA has bought Chillingo, Angry Birds and Cut the Rope publisher, for $20 million cash, I think it is.
Although, I have to say, that's not been confirmed by anyone.
It hasn't been confirmed by anyone. No.
So it's a speculative number at this point.
There's all sorts of crazy numbers being thrown around. I heard one person saying it was as much as $250 million, which I thought was ludicrous.
So, what does everyone think about this? I mean, it's not Angry Birds, obviously, because Rovio own that. They only published on the iPhone version. But
yeah, I mean, I think that's a good place to start. I mean, because I do think that there's a little bit of confusion about exactly what Chillingo owns versus, you know, what these developers owned. And certainly in the case of Angry Birds, Chillingo doesn't own that property. They're just a publisher. Well, so Rovio owns the rights to it.
I think it's kind of the term publisher is quite an interesting term, though, because in many ways Chillingo are a distributor, really, because they don't. I would be surprised, really, if they own the IP to almost anything other than I know they have they've just started publishing or distributing, I guess, on Android, and they've done some stuff on PSP Minis. I know they said they had the PSP Minis license for Angry Birds as well, so I think they have some things, but they're not really a publisher like we imagine EA being a publisher and owning all the rights to everything. I don't think that's ever been their kind of business model, really, which is why I think most people thought if $20 million was the number, then that was fairly low. Obviously, compared to NG Moco, $400 million two weeks ago. I mean, and they're completely different companies in how they operate. So, obviously, people just compare money. So it's an interesting comparison.
I wonder what the responsibility of a distributor actually is on the App Store. Because I'm trying to sort of think about. I mean, do they gain extra exposure for the games? I mean, Angry Birds have been a massive success without Chillingo's help? Or,
well, this is why Chillingo are worth some money, because they're one of the first companies to set up to be a publisher. And one of the first games they did was Zedbound, which is obviously, you know, one of the, didn't sell that well, but was one of the, you know, the massive, one of the first massive games where critically people said, wow, you can do amazing stuff on the iPhone. Mm-hmm. So they definitely have a brand name, and they've definitely pushed games that otherwise wouldn't have got noticed, I think. So they've earned their whatever percentage they take off the developer for publishing it. But they've never really done a lot of marketing, and they've never until recently, really until this year, done a lot of kind of PR backing for the games, because obviously how many they put out, Tracy? It's like 1,000, isn't it, something?
Oh,
over 1,000.
Yeah. It's ridiculous.
I mean, it's a staggering amount. I mean, most of them you've never heard of, because it's just so
and
many.
And to be clear, that's also including their less expensive label, Click Gamer. Between those two brands, I mean, it's hundreds of games.
But remember, Angry Birds was first put out on Click Gamer. No one mentions that anymore. But you know, it wasn't even one of their premium games when it came out.
I mean, I think this is interesting. For EA, for a company that doesn't really, you know, they essentially focus on premium titles. You know, they have their established franchises that they have done very well with, both critically and commercially. And, you know, they've tried their hand unsuccessfully at lower priced games and casual games. And I think for EA, I think part of the buyout is to try to get a piece of that market. What's could be a problem, though, is what you're hearing from Rovio, you know, about how they are not wanting to work with Electronic Arts and how they're going to, you know, do it on their own. I think that could be a problem if other small developers are wary of working with Chillingo moving forward. That could undercut the entire reason that EA is hoping to, you know, to essentially use Chillingo for. Otherwise, I mean, the other way of looking at it, which is the complete opposite end of the spectrum, is that EA just wants to take out a competitor. And the easiest way for them to do that is essentially to buy them.
But they're not really a competitor because they don't really do premium games.
Right.
I mean, that's not
right.
The focus. I mean, to be honest, I think it's a really good deal for both companies as long as whatever the price is. I think, you know, that's a pretty good deal. I would think even if $20 million is a deal for Chillingo. And it's, you know, it's good for EA because they don't operate in that part of the market at all. They suddenly, even if they just get kind of, you know, Chris and Joe who set it up, basically these guys who know every iPhone developer in the world who just immediately can look at a game and kind of roughly tell, you know, how commercially successful it's going to be. And then I guess you're right, Tracy. The interesting thing now will be if you publish through Chillingo, how is the legal documentation going to change? Because it kind of makes sense for EA going forward is to say, well, we want kind of more rights than just the iPhone rights. You know, for those Chillingo games now, and I'm sure Chillingo, for the games they're signing now, they're going to want Android rights to those to the games because they want to do Android releases. If they're doing that, why wouldn't they want Windows Mobile? So, and then taking another huge step forward, the really interesting thing will be is if EA give Chillingo money to actually kind of fund game development. Because as far as I understand it at the moment, pretty much developers have funded their own development and then given the games to Chillingo to publish. So they've not really funded it in the traditional model. But obviously EA could give them $1 million and go out and get 20 games made, you know. And obviously that completely changes it then because they can get put through the EA marketing machine. You know, you can imagine in this scenario, you know, Angry Birds published by Chillingo, EA owns the licensing, and then suddenly you are having PS3 games based on Angry. You know, when you have that big hit, suddenly EA can just come in and, you know, make it a $1 billion thing. I mean, I'm not sure that will happen. That's a few years down the line, but that's the really clever reason.
I think this transaction is more indicative of where iPhone iPad gaming is really how is it maturing, less so than the DNA NG Moco acquisition, simply because I think the amount of money that's involved with that acquisition of NG Moco combined with the fact that DNA was more interested in buying NG Moco's resources and plus network versus actually buying their sort of their IP and buying their development talent. There's been a real brain drain over at EA. At NG Moco. A lot of their senior producers have left the company. So really DNA is, you know, the move, at least how I see it, is meant as getting a foothold in a market which they don't have any presence.
Oh yeah, no, I think
so. And this is very different from this transaction where you see EA trying to fill out, you know, trying to get a hold into, you know, this sort of casual lower priced sector of the market. And I think it is kind of up in the air, will this work?
No one confirmed $20 million, but if it's $20 million and doesn't work, then that's fine, you know. But I think you're completely right. The NG Moco deal is the valuation is based on the Plus network, which is kind of interesting that obviously Chillingo had their own network, the Crystal network, which I kind of thought was fairly good, you know, as it worked, but just didn't have any developer support. I guess within Chillingo it did, but you know, he had nothing like any support. And the two valuations are, the only reason the two valuations could be an interesting comparison is obviously one company's been bought for potentially 20 times the amount of the other one, and both of them kind of have the same technology or effect. Yeah. You know, so that kind of suggests that EA haven't bought them for Crystal. So,
well, and that's an interesting point, because from discussions that I've had with people who are close to this transaction, EA had looked at some sort of agreement with Chillingo well over a year ago, starting a year ago, because they were interested in Crystal. And once it had become very clear that, you know, Game Center was going to be a lot more substantial than had previously been expected, EA kind of stepped back from that, those discussions, because they didn't think that Crystal was going to be really a player in the marketplace. You know, I still think, you know, I mean, what we've now, I think everybody expected, once we had learned that Game Center was going to be more substantial with its sort of multiplayer gaming features, that it was going to be more of a success. And what we've, you know, found since it launched, when was it, a month or two ago? It hasn't been quite the hit.
No.
As it, you know, that everybody was thinking it is. So I think there's a little bit of renewed sort of interest in, I mean, obviously Crystal didn't drive this transaction. I mean, but I think, you know, EA probably came back to the table and said, you know, maybe we can still use some of this technology. Maybe we're not going to use, you know, push Crystal as a competitor to Game Center, but there's some stuff there that they can use. You know, because if you look at some of the EA games, you know, not necessarily on iPhone and iPod Touch, but just as a company in general, they really do try very hard to brand their games and try to get that, you know, sort of customer retention in terms of, you know, here are more games. You know, if you play on a console, if you play an EA console game, they have their own like EA Nation login and stuff like that. So it's not necessarily a stretch to think that they would want to do that on iPhone and iPod Touch.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing with something like Crystal is obviously, and they haven't done it, but presumably it will go cross-platform. So, you know, at some point EA will need some sort of mobile cross-platform technology, won't it? So, I mean, quite whether they'd use Crystal. I mean, I guess it wouldn't be that hard for EA to build their own version, wouldn't it?
You know? Well, you know, it reminds me a lot of what Nokia did with Sega when they purchased Snap and basically took the technology that Sega had developed for all of the online stuff for Dreamcast and essentially reconfigured it so that with it into what was then Engage Arena.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know. I think the primary focus in this transaction, and I'm sure you agree with me, John, is really trying to get a foothold into the casual market, because EA just hasn't been able to do that. Even titles that they thought were going to do very well. And honestly, I think we thought they were going to do well, like R-Type. You know, lower priced game that resonated with gamers or used to resonate with gamers didn't do very well.
They're also trying again, of course, because Reckless Racing, which came out yesterday, is one of the lowest priced games that EA brought out, especially on the iPad, which is $2.99, which for them is cheap. I mean,
Was surprised. I was really surprised at that. I was expecting a full $9.99, or at least a $4.99 title.
But again, I mean, they haven't developed that, have they? So again, I guess it's part of the same thrust that they're looking now to do deals with mobile developers to publish games that they wouldn't be able to develop, able to develop in house, but haven't really got the kind of the small structure to develop those games quickly. So yeah, I think you're right, Tracy. Obviously, this is they've decided that there is long-term money to be made, not just on iPhone, but in all these mobile devices, and this is a kind of a way of buying that knowledge fairly cheaply. I mean, EA have about $1 billion worth of cash or something. It's more than that, isn't it? $3 billion? I can't remember.
Last time
I looked, they had a lot. It wasn't as much as Apple, I don't think this has really affected their credit worthiness very much.
Well, and I think it's worth noting before we move on is that of all of the divisions of EA, that in terms of success this year, EA Mobile is really the only division within the company that is turning a profit. You know, their console division is struggling. They've had a number of games that have not performed up to expectation. But when you look at their iPhone and iPod Touch portfolio, you know, even the ones that we would qualify as not doing very well are still making money.
Although it's a fairly small amount of EA's overall turnover.
Right. It's like, right.
What is it? Looking it up. Yeah, 6.4% in the last quarter. So. Yeah.
Talking of Apple, before Tracy came in with the final point, there's another sort of business related news this week, which is that Apple revealed, or rather Steve Jobs leapt on the line to investors to tell everyone how great the iPhone was getting. Like in sales, up 91% last year, 14 million new people, 14 million potential new gamers. So if you know someone who's just bought an iPhone, do recommend the site to your friends.
That's not in the last year. That's in the last 3 months.
Last quarter.
Scary.
Sorry, last quarter. Yeah, well, that's pretty good going. He basically laid into all the other competitors as well, which is always entertaining for everyone writing headlines.
Very odd. It was really odd because you can listen to it, I think, for next week on their webcast thing. Because normally for those kind of things, they are really boring, and the people who talk are kind of financial analysts who ask incredibly obscure
questions
about markets in China and stuff. And suddenly Steve Jobs was there, and all these kind of really boring guys were trying to. They were trying to like quickly ask really interesting questions, but they weren't quite up to it because they were financial guys. And Steve Jobs was just like running around, like swinging everyone. Everyone was amazing. Oh, yeah.
John, what do you think? I mean, I think these figures are astounding. I mean, when you're talking about this being a quarter, it's up 91% over same quarter last year.
Yeah.
At what point does this momentum start to fade? I mean, this has been now 4 years that these products, I mean, obviously we're talking about, you know, these sales are driven by newer handsets, but it's essentially the same, you know, core device. How long is this going to last?
Well, yeah, I mean the weird thing is that the kind of people, you know, the people who buy the shares, Apple shares, despite these results, they've kind of decided they weren't quite as good as they expected, which kind of made you think, you know, really, how many did you expect to sell? And the really technical obscure thing is they've started to worry now that they're not selling enough iPads to iPhones because there's slightly less margin on iPads, so they make slightly less money per iPad sold than they do on an iPhone. So the really odd financial eggheads have started to. I mean, obviously, Apple share price is still miles over $300, which is, you know, the first time it's ever got over there, so it's a very kind of kind of marginal. Oh, they might have peaked. But I mean, the really kind of scary thing, I guess, is it's pretty much every part of Apple's business is now doing well. You know, sold like, was it like 40% more Macs? You know, I mean, everyone thought the Mac was dead as a device. You know, there's 7.5 million iPads in 6 months. You know, iPhone, it's just. You know, I guess when this whole Verizon thing finally kicks off, that's going to take it up another level again, isn't it? So I think it's hard to see the kind of just in terms of these sales figures quarter to quarter going up. I mean, they've probably got another year or so. Quite whether the share price is correctly geared to that is, I guess, a complicated thing about how confident people are. But
well. Moving from confidence, if you're feeling confident, listeners, you can. Well, I'm moving back more to sort of game news as well. We're currently holding, I think it's our second Real Football 2011 competition, where you could win an iPod Touch 4G and a Barcelona shirt signed by David Villa, not Villa.
Villa.
From Birmingham. I thought he was.
Yeah. His brother Aston is doing really well currently at the moment. Yeah, to enter the competition, you either need to retweet the story. So if you type in Real Football 2011, you'll find it, or like it using the Facebook. And you also need to be a follower of Gameloft UK on Twitter, and a liker on Facebook. I don't quite get that last bit, but yeah, if you follow Gameloft UK, you're on the right track. But anyway, so the competition closes on November the 3rd, so there's only a week and a half to go. The full details are, of course, on the website. There's already been 200 tweets of this, so there's quite a lot of people who have entered already. But if you're feeling confident, much like the Apple shareholders, Then do enter, because it's good, and it's a genuine signed shirt. He has actually signed it. It's not a machine. And you'll also get an iPod Touch 4G. So that's a pretty good prize. Anyway, well, I think that's enough for the news. So let's all take a trip down into the rumor mine.
Rimmer. Rimmer.
I like the new lift he's installed. That's pretty cool.
I know. It doesn't feel like it's going to break anymore.
Yeah. Well, it's not made of cardboard. I did think that was a fatal engineering flaw of the previous model, but never mind.
Scotch tape and cardboard.
So, what's in the rumor mine? What is this carving?
Well, the Tolingo discussion will continue. Our first rumor is that under the agreement that EA is signing with Tolingo, is that they are going to be allowed to remain largely autonomous. Sort of like if you're familiar with a company, DICE, they do Battlefield, and they're doing the new Need for Speed. They've been allowed largely to kind of do their own thing, and not really kind of absorbed fully into EA. And apparently that's what Chilingo is going to be allowed to do, kind of go out there and find their own, you know, games that they want to publish, with the backing of EA, of course, because they'll be owned. But, yeah, that's the rumor. That's our first rumor this week.
Could be risky.
Well, this is kind of standard procedure, though, isn't it? Do you not think, Tracy? I mean, every time someone buys a company, that's pretty much always what they say.
Right. Yeah.
Because for a certain period of time, that will clearly be what happens, because, you know, Tolingo are based in the middle of nowhere, and there's no EA offices anywhere near them. So
exactly.
They can't like move them. If they were in London, they could like move them into the London office, but. You know, they're in Macclesfield.
You're absolutely right. I think the difference here, what the rumor miner is trying to say is that there's been usually what happens is after a period of time, after these sort of transactions go through, then there is some sort of assimilation in, you know, okay, we're moving you to this office, or we're dissolving this. We don't need this PR department. We don't need the da-da-da. But I think there is some, you know, like what we were speaking about earlier about, you know, how does EA sort of maintain Chilingo's credibility as a publisher / distributor with these indie studios and encourage them to continue working with Chilingo under EA parentage. And I think, you know, that's essentially what the rumor is saying, that EA kind of wants a piece of the action, but also is understanding that they can't meddle so much in what Chilingo is going to be doing. Otherwise they risk, you know, essentially scaring off the very games that they want to publish. I don't know. It's interesting. I mean, it could go either way. I mean, I think it's really, I can't envision a scenario in which, you know, 2 years from now, or not even that long, you know, 12 to 18 months from now, things are not going well, that EA is just going to sit back and let not do anything about it.
I mean, look, I guess the other difference to what would be a traditional buyout, and certainly DICE, when EA bought DICE, I mean, DICE were probably about 50 people, you know, and when I went to see them a couple of years ago, they were like 200 people, you know, there's a big outfit, whereas Chilingo is, what is it? I mean, it's like less than 10, isn't it? I mean, so, so it's not like you're not like sacking the PR department or the marketing department, because they haven't got a marketing department, they got a marketing person, you know,
exactly.
So it's pretty different. It's been interesting. And to be fair, the other kind of acquisition that happened at the start of the year was NG Moco and Freeverse, and they said the exact same thing. And as far as I know, Freeverse have pretty much been allowed. Yeah, they're still operating on their own in wherever they are, New York. So, yeah.
Writing freemium games for NG Moco.
They changed the model, but they didn't shut down the office. So I guess you're right, Tracy. If everything kind of works well, then you don't change anything, do you? But I think if they decide it's not working well, then probably things do change and you lose your independence quite fast.
It's gonna be, I think this is just absolutely fascinating. everybody's watching this because everybody wants to know, really, to go back to the earlier point we were saying, you know, what is the difference between a publisher and a distributor on the App Store? And I don't think anybody knows right now. And this is really going to be a test of that.
The other interesting thing, I guess, is the corporate culture, because EA, obviously, EA, even as a games company, are fairly kind of traditional corporate, whereas obviously Chiningo set up by two kind of guys, whatever it was, like 5-6 years ago, and it's, you know, they run it as their own kind of company, and it's, you know, it's theirs, well, not anymore, but, I mean, that potentially is a bit of a clash of kind of like suits versus kind of startup.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Speaking of startups, Rovio isn't a startup. They've been around for a while. But I had to segue somehow to the next room. We've talked before. There was a rumor a few weeks ago. I can't remember quite how long ago it was, about Angry Birds 2. And we have another Angry Birds rumor, and this shouldn't be all that surprising given the release of Angry Birds Halloween, but Rovio is planning to do an Angry Birds Christmas in December.
Yeah.
So, more levels. Apparently, the rumor miner is saying that that although Angry Birds has been very successful in good part due to the availability of those free level packs that they've been releasing via updates, apparently Rovio is a little miffed about that they feel like they could have made money off of those, which is why they're doing Angry Birds Halloween and rumored to do Angry Birds Christmas as a way of trying to get some cash for what would have normally been released just as free updates.
Yeah, and that kind of makes sense, because I mean, it is a big problem for developers, isn't it? Where you kind of you give away updates, hopefully to drive more sales, but obviously when you get to a certain level, then that's actually not really driving the sales. Maybe new iPhones are driving sales, but
yeah,
the same thing that kind of Pocket God did, didn't it? Where they were kind of locked into this updates all the time, and they and they had to go for in-app purchases. I mean, I'm kind of surprised they haven't gone for in-app purchases up to this point. I mean, obviously they've announced it, haven't they? The Mighty Eagle thing.
I mean, they've probably been looking at the numbers and seeing that that in-app purchases are just not at the levels that they're wanting.
Well, some people think they're enormous.
Oh no, I'm not denying that. I'm just saying what Rovio may be wanting more, maybe wanting a higher level of in-app purchases than what they're seeing from numbers that they're looking at, and that's why they may not be moving in that direction. I mean, I think this is fine. I mean, I think the Halloween thing was a good idea, and if the Christmas one it comes true, I think it's a great idea, because they've now built enough of a presence that people know Angry Birds, so it's recognizable. I don't think these holiday offshoots are going to do huge numbers, you know what I mean? But I think they'll sell just fine.
They probably do. Yeah, they probably do like a million, won't they? I would think. That kind of sense. No, I mean, I think with Rovio, the question is they pretty much want to do everything, don't they? They want to release more versions of it, theme versions, do in-app purchases, get it out on every available phone that they can, you know, do PSP minis, do, you know, DSi, do
plush toys.
Yeah, plush toys seem to be really big, doesn't it? Yeah, apparently the film thing has been kind of marked down a little bit, I think.
Oh, what?
Pokemon. They got a bit carried away with the talk of the film. I think they suddenly realised it takes like years and years and years. Like the whatever happened to the Halo film?
Yeah. Oh, what about a TV series then? I'd watch a TV series of Angry Birds. Wouldn't really, but I'm sure a lot of people would.
Not a lot of money in TV series, are there? I don't think.
No.
Non Chilingo Angry Birds news. Our final rumor has to do with Capcom and an action series that has not been around for, at least 4 years.
Is this going to be another series where I really should have played it, but I accidentally didn't?
Maybe. have you ever played Onimusha?
No, I'm going to have to wiki this because I might have.
Japanese demon mythology. You play as
like hack and slash.
Yeah. It was one of the first. It was among the first PlayStation 2 series, like exclusive series, because it came the first one came out in the first 6 months after the launch of PlayStation 2, and there were three of them, and the second one didn't sell as much as the first, and the third one didn't sell as much as the second, so they've kind of let it rest. But given how successful some of these hack and slash games have been on iPhone and iPod Touch, Capcom is considering revitalizing the series on the devices.
I don't think I have played it. Although, annoyingly, the wiki entry doesn't have any screenshots, so I don't know. But I can't remember playing it, so it's another one.
Well, I'd say if you were... You know, there are some games that can stand the test of time. I don't know how well Onimusha would stand the test of time. Because it has those kind of clunky Resident Evil controls that, you know, so it's...
I like the clunky Resident Evil controls.
John, you were going to say something?
No, yeah, because it was... At the time, it was kind of exciting because it was new and, you know, PS2 and all that. But it didn't really... Because, like, comparing it to, like, Devil May Cry, which I guess...
Oh, my God, yeah.
I don't know which one sold more, but one of them was, like, exciting and, like, different and a bit, you know, kind of devilish. And the other one was, like, a little bit, oh, it's a Japanese killing devil thing.
Yeah, it was very region-specific. It was very region-specific. I mean, but, and I'll talk about this in greater length when we get to the games that we're playing, but I just finished playing Samurai 2 Vengeance, which is essentially a copy of the original Onimusha with its own visual style. And it works. It's great fun. So I think that there's a space for it. I mean, I think it could be a good idea. I mean, even if it doesn't do very well, hey, you know, you gave it a shot. Couldn't be too expensive to do it on iPhone, iPod Touch versus, you know, doing a big Onimusha 4 for PlayStation 3 Xbox 60. Yeah. So
no, it would work as a kind of like a marketing tester thing, wouldn't it? To see, does anyone remember?
Yeah, I mean, I think it would certainly do a lot better than something like Dino Crisis.
I like Dino Crisis.
I like Dino Crisis.
I do too. But I think Onimusha would probably resonate a little bit more than Dino Crisis. I mean, Dino Crisis is pretty out there. And that third one was so bad.
Oh, I didn't play the third one.
It was so canned that I think that series is dead.
Well,
I think I actually reviewed the first one in Japanese.
Oh, really?
Time ago. Yeah, as I remember. I think I actually finished it in Japanese. I was quite impressed. I had no idea what...
Do you know what? Hilariously, I completed it in Japanese as well. It's the only game I've completed in Japanese. But anyway, Onimusha is the fifth biggest franchise in 2000... Well, in terms of Capcom's franchises as of 2008, according to Wikipedia, which is quite big, really. So it should be able to do well. Anyway.
Well, I know that before we move on, I think part of the reason why they've also kind of left Onimusha behind is they've been making a very concerted effort over at Capcom to westernize their games. So, you know, something about Japanese demon hunting doesn't quite fit with that new strategy.
Well, we're coming to the end of the room. Mine, I can see the light. So we better take this other lift, which isn't quite so well constructed, out of the bones of the victims of truth. And we'll take that up. We'll take it up to the surface.
Should we put our sunglasses on?
Using a gristle crank. So here we go, guys.
I'm putting my sunglasses on.
Oh, and we're going to be doing what we've been playing next. I almost screwed that link up, but not quite.
What we've been playing!
Okay, so what have we been playing this week? Tracy, do you want to start?
Yeah, I've played two games this week, Samurai 2 Vengeance and Reckless Racing. Samurai 2 is actually, out of those two, I actually like it. I prefer it more. I had more fun with it than Reckless Racing, although I gave both of them the same score. I just really liked Samurai 2, and I think a large part of the reason is because I did not like the original. I thought it was kind of a mess. It had really great cel-shaded visuals. It was really cool looking, but the gameplay was really bland. It used a gesture-based combat system, so you would, you know, slide your finger in different ways across the screen to execute attacks, and it was just really messy and unresponsive, and that was all thrown out the window for this sequel. And they got rid of the gesture-based control scheme. They replaced it with virtual controls. They changed the screen orientation from portrait to landscape. They improved the graphics. They added evasive maneuvers, which were missing from the first game. It's so much better. It feels like an action game that is, you know, playable. The first one I just didn't think was very playable. And I know that some readers really loved the first one. And if you really loved the first one, your mind is going to be blown by the second one, because it's just such a huge difference. That said, it is a typical action game. The level design is pretty straightforward, not a lot of variety in terms of the environments and what you're doing. There's a lot of visual variety, but in terms of the levels themselves, it's essentially you're walking across long bridges and through extended corridors hacking enemies. There aren't any puzzles. There isn't any platforming. And that can be a good thing, because one of the things, for example, with Onimusha that really hurt it is that you would have these really great bits of action, and then you would have these ridiculous puzzles that cut too much into that action. So while it's great that the game doesn't have puzzles like that, it also means that it feels a little bit bland. It feels a little bit too samey. There's just not enough. There could be a little bit more variety, a little bit more that could be done with it. But I still really enjoyed it. If you love hack and slash games, you're really going to like it. I think it's worth the download. And it's a universal. So for $2.99 American USD, you get both versions, which is, I think, a great deal. The other one I've been playing is Reckless Racing, which I know a lot of people have been looking forward to this. And I was surprised by it. I'm not a huge fan of top-down racers, because it can often be difficult to nail the controls on the touchscreen. They work a lot better with a controller, but they actually work pretty well here. There's a default touch mode where you have arrows that you touch on the screen, and it actually works really well. If you're going to play it, I would highly advise sticking to that control scheme. There's a tilt control configuration that I felt was incredibly confusing. Like very disorienting, because you're tilting your handset while your car is going in. It's very weird. But in terms of gameplay, it's a little brief. You get 10 tracks, five of which are reverse designs of the original five. And they're short, but the driving mechanics, it's very much a slippery sort of drift racer. And it's really fun because it's almost more about sliding about the road and like trying to stay in the race as much as it is about the racing itself. And let me give you an example. There's a track, I think it's called Thrasher Hill, where the road actually is winding along the edge of a cliff. So as you're sliding and drifting through these corners, like you're struggling to stay on the road and not veer off the cliff. And so you literally you'll see your back two tires like go off the edge of the road. And it's really fun to do that. And it's even better when you take it online, and you can do that on iPhone with up to three other people. So, and you're just essentially racing for the best time. And I think it's enjoyable, and for the low price, I think it's a great deal. So if you're into, racing, we haven't had a good racing game in several months. So I think it's definitely worth picking up.
John,
mm.
What have you been playing this week?
I have actually been playing games this week, which is not recently. I haven't been. I've just been busy with other things, strangely. But yes, I got a preview build of a new game from Cobra Mobile, which is continuing their iBomber kind of series of games, or at least the brand. So it's called iBomber Defense, I think it's called.
Isn't a tower defense
game. So it's a tower defense game. Which, yes, maybe I'm not quite as depressed about that tower defense as you clearly are, Will. But, I mean, as we all know, kind of tower defense has been pretty much kind of like done to death on the iPhone. So, but this is, well, I don't think it does anything kind of amazingly new, particularly. Like most of Cobra's games, it's really nicely presented, really kind of beautiful kind of user interface. It is a universal app, I think. Well, anyway, I'm playing it on the iPad, so it's like a really, you know, really everything's kind of nice and big, and you're not doing anything you wouldn't otherwise kind of do. But they're kind of, I don't know, maybe some people who are really tower defense will find it a bit limiting in the sense that there's not a vast amount of units. I think there's only like maybe 5 or 6 units. But you kind of have ones where you have like a radar unit, and you kind of, as you level it up, it kind of increases the power of the units around it. I think it's done pretty well. They have I guess fairly standard things that you can kind of rewind levels but I don't think it's not going to change the philosophy of tower defense games, but I've been playing it more than I thought I would, so I guess that's a good sign, really. And let's say it's a preview version, so they're still tweaking various bits and bobs, so it may get even better when it comes out. I think it's due out next couple of weeks. A few other things I've been playing around with. I wouldn't quite say I've been kind of playing them to death. I don't know if anyone's played the Fable Kingmaker app, which is I don't know whether we'd struggle to call it a game, really. It's
Foursquare.
It is Foursquare for Fable, but I think I quite like the idea. I quite like the idea of going around and should I explain it? So basically, it's a marketing kind of app for Fable 3, the game, and basically I think it's on iPhone, Windows Mobile now, Android. I guess it probably is, isn't it? And there's a web. I'm not sure you can play it on the web or not, but there's a web kind of client as well.
You can see the leaderboards.
You see that, yeah. And I think it's just Europe, isn't it? It's not the US, I don't think.
Yeah.
But anyway, you when you sign up to this game, you get given one side, a blue or a red or a royal or a rebel, and you just go around. You have 10 flags a day, and as you travel around, it uses your GPS, and you just place your flags in areas, and depending on who has the most flags, that area is royal or rebel, which is not amazing, amazingly exciting. But for your actions, you win gold, and that gold, if you then go and buy Fable 3 when it's out at the end of the month, you can upload that gold into the Xbox game.
Is it still called Fabel?
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Yeah, they spelt it wrong on the App Store description. I haven't checked actually recently, so it's really hard to find because they spelt it wrong. But even worse than that, or not worse than that, I guess. But the if you look at the iTunes link, it's actually called Kingmaker. So it's the whole thing's been a bit of a balls up from that. And we seem to have had a lot of people commenting on our article about it, saying how it was really rubbish and how they couldn't get it to work. And I had a few problems getting it to work as well. So,
well,
anyway.
I did start it up, but then it said sign in and make a username, and I thought, ah.
You didn't even get that far. Yeah, it is strange that you have to do all that kind of stuff, do you? Yeah, it just seemed like quite a hard entry level. But anyway, so I've kind of been fiddling around with that. I think it's quite an interesting kind of idea, and it's good they're doing it, but maybe not the best implementation. And a few other things I've just been playing around with. I have to mention this, which is kind of... actually, on the similar thing, I just got My Town, which is a similar thing to Foursquare, which is kind of a game. I have no idea how to play it. Not a clue.
Really?
I just, like... It's really odd. I mean, in Foursquare, obviously, you just go around and go, I'm checking into places. And My Town's a bit more of a game thing. It's obviously my fault. I'm just kind of a bit thick when it comes. But it's too much of a game for me. I'm not really sure what I'm supposed to be doing. Because it kind of links in, you kind of buy places that are around you. So it is location-based. But then you seem to be able to, you rent them. And I can't work it out. Anyway. anyway. So that's that. And finally, there's an interesting, I guess, going back to a marketing kind of thing. It's a game called Tiki Toss 3D, which is a bit of a kind of like a skee ball type thing, where you apparently doesn't happen in the UK, I guess, but on the Hawaiian beaches, you have like a little surfboardy thing with a hook on it, and you attach a metal ring to a rope or something, and then you flick it onto the hook. That's the idea, anyway. I've never heard of it before, but I'd never heard of skee ball either. So that's kind of that's quite a nice kind of physics game. But I was actually sent a proper Hawaiian or whatever thing to set up in my house. So I now have dutifully set it up and realised that it doesn't really work in Manchester, and I'm really bad at it. I don't know. I don't know. It's one of these things. That, have you heard of these things before, Tracy? These well-known in America? Do you have them in Oregon? These?
No.
No. Maybe it's just a Hawaiian thing then.
I think they just made it up. They're trying to fool you.
Did you really?
Yeah, I think they're all having a big giggle. They're listening to this podcast and thinking, I can't believe it. He set it up. What an idiot. Yeah,
So yeah, that's what I've been up to this week.
Well. I've been playing a few games. I've been playing a tower defense game.
Have you scored it very, very highly?
I'm debating the score. I'm in. And also, I was playing. I played a bit of Game Dev Story as well. But I'll start with the tower defense one because I'm reviewing that one. And it's called Starfall HD, not to be confused with Starfall on the iPhone, which is not the same game. They do say on the app description that they're going to make an iPhone version of Starfall HD. It's going to be interesting what they're going to name it, because there's already a Starfall. Anyway, it's a tower defense game. You're in space. It's a space station. The space station is grey, as with all space stations, and it's kind of dull to look at. You basically place turrets down. Enemies come down from entrance points. You shoot them. You get money, you upgrade turrets and buy new ones. It's pretty much tower defense, although it is quite nicely presented, even though the graphics are a little bit boring. The animation's quite nicely done, very smooth. The turrets themselves are fairly standard, but the upgrade system is really good. It uses a very similar one to an Android title that I've played. The big Android title from about 4 months ago, Robo Defense, I think. And it's basically an upgrade system that works outside the battles as well as inside the battles. So you can unlock new buildings, unlock new subsections and special places, special maps, modes, everything. So that's cool. It's well balanced as well. So you unlock things quite regularly. And it's also got an interesting power system where you have to place down power generators to charge the turrets. And if you fire off too many turrets at too quickly at the with the same generator, it runs out of power. So you need to upgrade that and link it. So, I mean, that's cool. But
it sounds quite complicated there, Will. I think is it not very complicated?
Or
is
no, that people, not is really.
That what, is that what the tower defense?
the tower defense crew want more complications.
Do they?
Okay. Yeah, no, it's not actually that complicated. Actually, they don't really explain the power thing very well. I got caught out because it starts off with only about 10 waves at a time. And then when you're about halfway through the campaign, you're on 50 waves. And that's the moment when your power starts running out and you're thinking to yourself, well, what? When did this happen? But I mean, it's quite interesting. It's quite fun in that tower defense way. It doesn't really do that much new. I mean, there's special buildings like Ship Recycler, which allows you to make money from destroyed ships. It's not really much point building it. The only one that's actually been worthwhile is the R&D lab. R&D lab, which allows you to increase your power. That's it, really. So yeah, I'm sort of in two minds, because in one way I quite enjoy it because it's quite easy to switch off your brain to. The waves aren't very hard, and the enemies, I mean, even on normal, and normally I'm pretty bad at tower defense games.
really? But, I would have thought you'd been really good at them.
I'm terrible. But I'm really good at this one because it's quite easy. And I suspect that's because the upgrades are maybe slightly too powerful than the turrets. But it does mean that, you know, I can switch my brain off and I'm quite enjoying it. In a strange way, but there's nothing that's very surprising, other than the power running out all of a sudden. There's no like interesting maps. There's no surprises later on down the line. Once you've unlocked all the buildings, there's nothing left for you really to play. The other modes you unlock are basically just the same as campaign again. So, I mean, and it's only really challenging on hard, which is the hardest. Normal difficulties is still quite easy. So I'm in two minds, because I quite like it. I don't think it's bad. I don't think it's that amazing either. The other game I've been playing, of course, is Game Dev Story, which caused a bit of a stir at the weekend, anyway, on quite a few people's Twitter feeds. I quite like it. I spent pretty much 4 hours non-stop playing on Saturday. And after that 4 hours, I haven't played a single hour because I'd basically exhausted the game. But, I mean, it was quite fun during... I think once you... The basis is you set up your own games company and it's very abstract. So it's not really very realistic or anything. But it's quite fun. It's done like a sort of pixel art RPG management. And it's fun because you get to name your games. You get to say, like, I want to build an RPG based on pirates. Or, in my case, a card game based on swimsuits. Dead or high fives, people. Dead or high fives. Anyway, you get to name them, although the character limit's quite stingy. And you get to send them off and they sell and you make new games, etc. And it's quite well done. It's very, very easy to play and it's very easy to get sucked in because you're always doing something. But there's not much depth. Once you get to year 10 out of 20, there's nothing really left for you to go for anymore. You've got your own console out and you're like, every game you release, because your team is so good, it doesn't scale very well across the course of the game. So your first couple of games will always get like 4 out of 10 or 2 out of 10 by reviewers. And every game after like year 8 will get like 9 out of 10 because you've got like all the skilled staff. So there's no surprises then. There's no random events happening. There's no real interaction with other companies. There's no, you know, you just sort of, it was addictive and now I'm sort of like a bit exhausted. But I would say it's good. And I would recommend people to get it. I just don't think it's as good as some people were gushing about. But it is good. And it's £1 or something. So that's good. But it did make me think there's a lot of things that could be better. Like for a sequel. Anyway. We have a question. Before we finish this podcast. We have one question in the comments of the last podcast. Which is good because I can read it then. So if you are thinking about asking a question, that's probably the best place to put it, because I don't have access to the Twitter account. The question is from Triggy Wiggy, who praises the podcast, which is always a good one. I will read it if you praise it. If you slag off the podcast, I'll probably still read it, to be fair. But anyway, I have a question. Oh, no, I have one question. What do you see in the future for the iPod and the App Store? And then he's followed up with a suggestion, which is possibly the ability to rent apps. It's quite a hard question, this. Who's got the crystal ball? Who's got the company crystal ball? Sorry.
John, you start.
Renting apps. Like, I don't know. Maybe does that come from the kind of Apple TV kind of renting kind of thing? I can't really, I don't really see why would anyone want to rent an app? Yeah. I guess the biggest issue why they wouldn't do that is the minimum price is 99 cents. So if you were renting something, there'd be a sub cut of that. So just no one would make any money, because why would you rent something that's 99 cents when you can buy it? I don't know. I don't think rental is going to be where Steve Jobs is looking for his next 500 billion.
Yeah. It works for television and movies because people just want to watch something once, but with games, no. Games and apps. I mean, because why would somebody rent Pages for iPad?
But why wouldn't anyone want to rent Chaos Rings?
I get the point with something like that, with like a game, but that just seems really confusing to me. I don't know. I have to agree with John. I just don't think that's going to happen.
I mean, there is an interesting thing that's not purely for Apple, but you're kind of, Vodafone launched this kind of a rental. It wasn't just for single apps, but it's a rental service where you could like a subscription service, I guess you'd call it a similar thing, I suppose. Where you had a subscription for like €5 a month, and you could play as many games as you liked. Mm. You know, and I mean that's just kind of. So I think those things can work in terms of. It's a new way of attracting people who don't want to play $9.99 for Chaos Rings, but they might want to pay $5 a month and be able to rent a whole bunch of games. So, to that degree, I think that is a very good question, and certainly, other platforms and other particularly mobile operators are looking to do those kind of things and traditionally do that kind of stuff. I mean, Verizon do that in the States, don't they, Tracy? It's been big with rental and subscription, as far as I know.
I actually don't know. I'm a little embarrassed to say I don't know. Yeah, I think that's a good idea. I mean, it'd have to be a lot more than $5. I mean, the sort of individual that would be willing to, that would want that sort of subscription based gaming for iPhone, iPod Touch, would be downloading such a high number of games that, you know, saying, oh, you can do it for only $5 would be laughable.
But you don't,
because you can download that many per day.
No, but I guess the thing would be, if you weren't subscribing, then somehow magically you wouldn't have access to them anymore, so you'd lose them. So it'd almost be like you'd be streaming them almost. You wouldn't download them as an app. That would be the clever thing, you see. Yeah, because otherwise you would just download the entire thing, wouldn't you?
Well, I mean, even then, though, I think that that would be still at a loss. I mean, I if I were Apple, I would charge more. I would charge, double, quadruple. I would say, $20 for a month, because the way that people are down, I don't know. I mean, that's a good question. I mean, I think you'd have to look. I mean, I don't claim to know, sort of the economics of subscription-based services. There are people that do and would definitely know what price point to set for that. But I think that's interesting. I mean, you kind of see that a little bit on PlayStation Network with their Plus service, where they're offering games for free every other week or once a month or something like that. And then they offer discounts on select titles. And it's seemingly doing okay.
And I think it clearly really works for digital content, because you haven't got it's just you're sitting on your server for free anyway. So if you see that this game hasn't been downloaded at all this month, then why not have a cheap subscription service that you can put games that aren't being played, because people don't want to buy them, but people will play them if they can get them for free. So there is, I mean, that kind of marketing is always just people. There's always money in the system. It's just a case of how you kind of claw it out of people and give them a good deal. I mean, not just a nasty capitalist kind of.
It's a bit like the a bit like the Meta Bully, I think they're called, service, that French service, where you pay a sub flat rate fee and you get to download PC games, most of which are games with Tycoon in the title that aren't by Bullfrog or Chris Sawyer. So
I think a good way of going is, and PlayStation Network, or PlayStation Plus does it, is they pull from some of the older titles. Mm. So, for example, I know that I think it was the first month or the month after PlayStation Plus had launched, they offered Infamous as a free game. That's great. It's a good game. But, anyone who it was sort of a value proposition, like, look, hey, if you, there were a lot of people who didn't buy it. So if you were one of those people and you thought, hey, if I just pay the subscription fee, I get this, $30-$40 game for free. That's a great deal. And anybody who had already played the game, probably wasn't going to, do it anyway, because they're going to be buying all of the games that were going to be offered free through PlayStation Plus. They were probably going to be among the first adopters and going to pay the full price anyway. So it's really kind of the subscription model thing is probably going to reach people who are not necessarily going to pay full price for those games, anyway.
Yeah, not completely,
They'd have to be a lot more expensive than they are now, though, if it's going to be on the App Store, I think. Are we all in agreement?
I really can't see that it's going to happen on the App Store. I mean, I can't see that it's something Apple would, when they're, how many billion have they been downloaded now, apps? It's just unbelievable. It's not like it's a failure so far. It's not like people aren't downloading it because it's too expensive or something. I don't think Apple will do it. But outside Apple, definitely. In other app stores, in other good app stores, whatever the term is. In all good app stores apart from Apple.
Okay, well, that's the only question this week. So it's just left for me to say. I'm really dragging this out. Thanks.
Why? Have we not talked enough? Do
you need to talk more? We need to talk more.
You want to edit more? More
yes.
Editing required.
We've got the whole evening. I've already eaten. I don't need to move. Anyway, yes, we've reached the end of this podcast. Thank you for listening, listeners. I've been Will Wilson.
I've been Tracy Erickson.
And I've been John Jordan.
So, thank you for listening, and we'll see you all next week.